All right, welcome back. We're live, 2015 edition of Build. I'm here with some people. Tell us your names and what you do. You're Jim?
I'm Scott, and I work at Chipotle.
Yeah, apparently. You go all the time. What's with your Chipotle fixation?
It's then? Yummy.
Okay, okay.
And I agree. I like Chipotle, too. But I'm Damien, and I work on ASP.NET.
I'm Scott, and I work in ASP.NET and App Service.
I believe you're called El Jefe in the office. Is that what? And you, sir?
Rowan, I work on Entity Framework.
By the way, live questions. Rowan just stepped up. Entity Framework questions, please bring them up. I mean, I'm sure he wants to answer it. So when I started out, the first interview I did with Jeffrey Snover, I had some confusion about .NET Framework, client profile. How is that all set up now? Educate me, and then we'll talk about .NET Core and what that means for ASP.NET.
Okay, everyone's looking at me, so I'll answer. Okay.
Well, you've got a really cool shirt on.
Thank you very much. I like your shirt. So, the .NET framework, when you compile your application, you have to compile against a set of assemblies, right? When you add reference, those things exist, and you call APIs within those, you get IntelliSense, etc. A while ago, we introduced the concept of reference assemblies, which represent the platform that you want to compile against. So, for example, Silverlight or Windows Phone or wherever it is .NET is running, you want to say, I'm going to compile against that set of things. Because when you're in Visual Studio, you're not actually compiling against Windows Phone itself. You're not running Phone. You're compiling against a set of assemblies that represent that world.
Got it.
Those are reference assemblies. Think of them as contracts. So we have reference assemblies for each set of whatever, you know, .NET things you have on those platforms. .NET Framework has a set of reference assemblies that represent the .NET Framework on Windows. .NET Client Profile, which was something we did back in the .NET 4 timeline, also had a set of those things as well. And now that we have something like .NET Core, and we have DNX, and we have ASP.NET Core, and all those type of things, we have reference assembly sets for all of those as well. And moving forward in the .NET world, you can basically think you'll always be compiling against a promise of what you're actually going to be running against eventually.
I see.
And our portable class libraries, which we've had for a few years as well, work the same way. When you say, I want to write a portable class library that works on Silverlight 4, Silverlight 5, Windows Phone 8, 8.1, et cetera, you're building a common subset of reference assemblies. All those things get sort of munged down into a profile number, and there is on your hard drive a set of a reference assemblies for that profile number, and that's what you compile against.
Got it. So let's talk about the new ASP.NET. And this is going to be like a tough question. It feels like we're starting again, but not starting again. It's new, but it's not new. Help me understand, is it like a brand spanking new thing that we need to relearn, or is it part of something we already know? Tell me about that.
It's brand new.
Okay.
So it's a brand new thing that looks a lot like the old thing.
Got it.
It's concept compatible.
It's concept compatible. So if you were building an MVC application, yes, there still are controllers, there still are actions, there still is Razor. But if you go deep down the stack, there is no system web.
Got it. And that's an interesting distinction, right? But if you are already building MVC applications, you should be happy moving over to the new stuff.
You know, I went from a regular car to a hybrid car. The mechanics had to relearn how the Prius works, but it still drives the same.
Got it.
So, stuff underneath has changed, but for the most part, I can still get from point A to point B with the concepts and the techniques that I'm used to using. But I can also bring in new techniques, open source JavaScript libraries, open source task runners. I've got modularity that I didn't have before. I've got choices.
You have cross-platform.
The other thing is it's still .NET. Right?
Yeah.
Just like .NET on Windows Phone is .NET, and .NET on Windows Desktop is .NET. .NET on System Web, or ASP.NET as we know it now, is .NET. And then we have .NET in ASP.NET 5 and a new thing called DNX. That is also .NET, depending on what you classify as .NET.
Right.
.NET represents a lot of things, like languages, compilers, all this type of stuff.
And I'm sure there was a lot of discussion before this happened as to why. What are the main benefits of doing this for people to move forward to the new ASP.NET? It seems like there's tons of cool stuff, but I want you to tell us about why you would go to that new.
Some of the big benefits, the two big ones are, we want to have the ability to be side by side. We never want to have the problem again where a customer wants to go build an ASP.NET application and put it on a server, and they're like, oh, I don't have the right version of .NET on the server. Or I'm afraid to put a new version of .NET on the server because it might break something else on the server.
Got it.
We don't want those problems to hinder people building our applications. So that was a huge thing we were looking for with ASP.NET 5. Another one was, we know that we're in a world where there's, in Azure Cloud, we have Linux, we have Windows, and we want ASP.NET to run everywhere that you can inside of Azure Cloud.
I like that. I mean, to me, it seems really cool, because now .NET is reduced to like, we're going to put a specific assembly for .NET in the bin folder. Is that kind of how it works?
Yes.
I wouldn't say reduced.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't.
It is improved
now. Yeah.
To the point where you've got your app, your user, your process gets to pick what, like in our demo, if you take a look at the deep dive into ASP.NET, he opens up a command prompt and switches from one .NET core framework to another. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, can you open up two and have this run on beta 3 and that run on beta 4 or this one 4 and 5 or whatever? Could you make your own personal private version of the core CLR and framework and run that all locally? And then the talk I did with Scott Hunter, we went and published an ASP.NET app to a memory stick, picked a laptop, a random laptop out of the audience.
I remember doing that with
you. And ran it off there, and it just worked because it's all private and local.
And that ASP.NET running on the memory stick, it did nothing on the machine. It touched no system 32, it touched no registry.
Nothing got installed.
It runs off the memory stick.
And so that means that, say you just finished your application, you're getting ready to deploy, and then a new version of .NET comes out, and so it's okay.
Sure.
Put the old one out there, and then when you want to upgrade, you're fine. It's now all in the, is it all in the bin,
and
director?
To be clear, we're talking about .NET Core as well. Let's be very clear about the distinction.
That's a good point.
If you run on .NET Framework, which is what ships with Windows, mm-hmm. you always run under the contracts and the behaviors of .NET Framework.
There's
a GAC, there's resolution rules that you really can't affect. .NET Core is where we get all these new capabilities and this new flexibility.
And ASP.NET 5 can target both of those.
Can run on both of those.
So when you're building an ASP.NET 5 app, you can choose to run on .NET 4.6 or .NET 5.2 or 4.5.2, or you can run on .NET Core. It's your choice. And there are some implications to those choices. .NET Core is 11 megs. .NET Framework today is over 100 megs. So .NET Core is not it doesn't have all the same stuff that .NET Framework has.
But it is the same ASP.NET 5. Like, to be clear, ASP.NET 5 runs on full framework. If you want to use it on 4.6, on the machines and the servers that you already have, it will work just fine. And it is not, there's not like two versions of ASP.NET.
Right, there's one.
There's the one, and it can run in multiple places.
That's really cool. So let's shift now to Entity Framework 7. Is this a new thing? Is it Entity Framework 6 plus more stuff? Tell us a little about it.
Take everything we just said about ASP.NET and swap out the name for Entity Framework, and you're basically in the same boat. So it's concept compatible. If you're interacting with the top-level API, it looks exactly the same. Under the covers, completely new core. We've ripped everything out. We're replacing it with stuff that is lightweight and extensible. It can run on full .NET. It can run on .NET Core. And
it can run on phones,
yeah,
it can run on tablets.
Yeah, so Windows 10 Universal App Platform, Entity Framework works there. And then I've also done some demos. Obviously, we get cross-platform with .NET as well now. Done demos with Xamarin Forms with it running even in an iOS emulator. So
that's fantastic. So that must have been some cool meetings. What are we going to do now with Entity Framework 7? Why did you decide to rip it out and then start again and have concept compatible, but maybe not bottom compatible?
So it's something we've been talking about doing for quite a while now. Ever since we did EF 4.1, we've talked about, could we replace the core of EF? And it never made sense because it's going to be a little bit of pain for some people as they upgrade. But then we've got ASP.NET coming. We need to run on this new .NET core. And at this point, the old code base we had, it's just not really feasible to go and achieve those things. And so EF7, and with everything else that's happening across Microsoft with cross-platform .NET Core, with ASP.NET 5 and all that stuff, it was the right time to go and do this.
I like it.
Yep.
So here's a question, and I think from Lars, and I think this is a good, it'll bring into relief a little bit.
You want to hit John's?
Sorry, John. Will F-sharp be supported as a first-class language in ASP.NET? Sorry, yes.
So the best way to answer that is we're still trying to finish ASP.NET. So one thing that important people understand is we're like a step behind Visual Studio schedule. So like they just shipped the RC this week, and we're still beta 4.
Right.
So we think that we'll be one milestone beyond Visual Studio. And right now, our goal is just to get C# done.
Got it.
And so we're open to things like F#. We're open to things like VB. But right now, our first goal, get C# shipped. And then we'll start working on having the extensibility model put into ASP.NET so we can go plug in other languages.
So to put a really fine point on that, when Visual Studio releases, we will not release.
We will be probably an RC when Visual Studio releases. And then on update one of Visual Studio, we will be RTM.
Because it needs to be done. It needs to be right.
Right.
It needs to be right. We're gonna do it correctly. We're not gonna try and rush this thing. We still have a lot of work to do. We had questions from customers this week when we've shown them stuff saying, how do I do X with ASP.NET 5? And you know what? I have to look at them and say, we don't know yet. We haven't quite got to that. That's on the list of things in the backlog we haven't designed yet because we're still sorting out some of the core elements.
And you know, I honestly prefer the way we're doing things now because it's better to, in the open, say, this is what we're doing, we're still working on it, take a look at it, than to build this whole thing and it be the wrong thing when it comes out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now, next question, and I think this will bring into relief a little bit how we think about things. ASP.NET or PHP?
Use whatever makes you happy. Just convince me on ASP.NET. Give it a try. See if you like it. There's lots of different things. There's web APIs. There's MVC. There's SignalR for real time. There's web pages, which is a lot like PHP. So if you're into PHP, Lars, who asked the question, go up to Mads Christensen's GitHub and look at Miniblog. It is a great example of a PHP-style application with the power of lambdas and C-sharp and the speed of the CLR. If that you look at that and that's the language of your soul, then you should use it. And if PHP is the language of your soul, then knock yourself out, use it. Just make sure that you're deploying it on Azure and using Visual Studio Code
when you edit your PHP. Another great reason to use ASP.NET is Visual Studio. I mean, we have one of the best IDEs on the planet, and it supports ASP.NET. You can also use Visual Studio Code if you're more of a text editor kind of person. But we have great tooling behind ASP.NET, probably more than PHP has.
Here's another question that gets into the architecture maybe of ASP.NET 5. What's the relationship between Katana Owen and ASP.NET 5?
Oh, everyone looks at me again. I can answer that. So Katana, you can think of as, Katana was the code name that we used for a bunch of projects that we did over the last couple of years. SignalR was built on Katana. Web API 2 can be hosted on Katana. Katana was an experiment in some ways. It was what would happen if we reimagined how ASP.NET could run outside of the context of IIS. Okay? So we implemented things like authentication on top of Katana, and we implemented, like I said, self-host server, SignalR, those type of things. OWEN stands for the Open Windows Interfaces for .NET, which is a layer of abstraction that allows anything that conforms to that abstraction contract, whether it be a web server or a web application sitting on top of that, or a web application framework, to work together. So if your web server talks OWEN and your web application framework talks OWEN, then you could run that application framework on that server. So Katana was our effort to sort of implement OWEN in a more strongly typed sort of, you know, Microsoft-y way. What we learned from Katana, we took over into ASP.NET 5. And indeed, the code name was Project K. We called it Project K because it was kind of our, let's take Katana and then take what we learned there and then reimagine everything. Like, not just reimagine a little bit, let's do the whole lot, all the way down to .NET. Let's not even assume Windows. Let's assume we can run it on Mac or Linux. What do we have to change to make that happen? So that was kind of a point in time. Katana was a point in time the last 2 and a bit years, and now we're moving on to ASP.NET 5.
A lot of folks don't even know that Katana's even there. So if you're running Web API 2 or SignalR 3, those are both running on Katana today. Even if you're building an ASP.NET 4X app, you're actually using Katana on those two platforms. They were already written in a way so they could actually run self-host outside of IIS and outside of system web.
So if a company has an investment in OWEN pipelines and components, mm-hmm. what do they do with those things when they...
So ASP.NET 5 is, OWEN is a feature of ASP.NET 5. We're not built on OWEN. Got so it. You can take an OWEN compliant server and run ASP.NET 5 on top of it. Mm-hmm. If you have OWEN middleware, which effectively is just a Lambda, it's a delegate that conforms to the contract, you can plumb that into the ASP.NET 5 HTTP pipeline by way of an adapter. Okay, so we support OWEN as a feature. We're not built directly on top of OWEN.
Got it. Okay, so let's talk about Entity Framework because I feel like we're leaving you out.
Absolutely.
What are the main differences that you would say, top level, between Entity Framework 6 and Entity Framework 7 as far as the developer experience and then maybe even as far as how the plumbing works?
So I think, yeah, absolutely. I was going to say one of the big decisions we had to make was in past releases of Entity Framework, we kind of had two ways of modeling. We had the EF designer, which was this, you know, boxes and lines over the top of an XML file. And then we had code first, which is a bad name. It's actually just code-based modeling, where I can express my modeling code, which could be creating a database from the model, or I could have a code model based on an existing database. And so EF7, we're removing support for the XML file format and just focusing on the code format. Now, people get stressed out when they hear this, but what we've seen is that people, especially with big applications in the enterprise scenario, they think that XML is going to work better for them, but when they actually try the code-based format, it works a lot better for team environments, for doing source control merges, everything split up into separate files, the same as all the rest of the code in your application, instead of storing everything in one massive XML file.
Got it. And so the designer is a big difference. Any other differences?
Yeah, so I think the top level API is the same, but once you drill into the core, things get pretty different. So if you're writing code that wants to look at the metadata model that represents your classes and how they map to the table and everything, things start to look a bit different there. Now, they look different because they're a lot better. If anyone's tried to use the metadata API in EF6, it's horrible, it's extremely unintuitive. In EF7, we bit the bullet and we actually made it usable, but that means it's different. So there's a bit of learning to do there.
All right, so moving back to ASP.NET, there's a lot of terminology. There's DNX, there's DNU, and there's a bunch of other things. Can you help us understand all of those tools, what they do and what they're for?
Watch our talk.
Yeah, you should watch our talk.
Like,
we go over those things.
It went really well.
Yeah.
And we did an hour of part one, mm-hmm. we did another hour of part two, and we feel that the story arc that we built in those talks, we didn't know it would work. I mean, honestly, you know, you put together a talk, you put a lot of work into a talk, it worked. Those are now the canonical 2 hours of, if you wanted 2 hours of training on ASP.NET 5, that's it.
Good start.
It really is a good start. But in the short is, DNVM is the version manager that lets you pick which DNX
framework
you want.
Okay.
DNX is the execution environment that gets it all started. And DNU are the utilities. It's everything else.
Build, package, compile, restore, those type of things.
Got it. And so if you really want to get a really good deep dive, just one session. What's the name of the session? The first one?
Intro to ASP.NET and then deep dive.
ASP.NET 5.
Sounds good. All right. So Dave asked a question, is .NET Core going to be faster than the full framework since it's only 10% in size? So
the simple answer is no.
Size and speed do not
don't correlate, right? But that said, we are doing a lot of work in ASP.NET 5 as part of this move to .NET Core and on .NET Framework still. To most of the speed gains, if they're going to be any, are actually in ASP.NET 5 itself, not in .NET Core versus .NET Framework. It's the same code. It's the same CLR. It's a smaller version of the CLR. But there isn't anything magically done in that CLR to make your application many, many times faster. We are doing performance testing. The big areas of improvement, so I can tell you now that the throughput testing we have and the memory use testing we've done for our test cases we have are now equal to or better than those apps running on MVC 5, okay, on .NET 4X. Where we've really made big inroads is in startup. One of the things ASP.NET was never particularly good at was if you did file new starter web, which had, you know, not that much code, but a bit, and then you ran it, it takes like many seconds for that app to boot, compile, and run on the server. We have drastically improved that. So over a period of 4 weeks, we got ASP.NET 5 in Azure down from a cold startup time of about 15 seconds to less than 3. And we still think that there are maybe like 30% chunks that we can grab as well.
There's
a lot
more
of that,
stuff that we can pull there.
You know, a lot of that is tricks. A lot of that is, you know, now we have a global packages location, so the packages don't live with the app necessarily anymore, so we can pre-cache all the most popular packages on the server, and a whole bunch of other tricks like that. So
ASP.NET's now modular too, so you can turn on or off as much of ASP.NET as you want. So if you want to go try to do something that's just going to go talk to a socket, you don't need routing, you don't need controllers, you don't need all that stuff. You can turn on and off as much as you want. So that's an area where we can increase the speed of ASP.NET, and we've dramatically reduced the memory as well. Just every request in System Web is 30K.
Got it.
Of stuff we build up. We build up 6K in ASP.NET 5. So that's a massive reduction in memory for every request that comes through, less work on the garbage collector. In most .NET applications, garbage collecting is what impacts your performance.
So here's an interesting question from John. He says, let's talk protocol. Does ASP.NET 5 change the fundamental HTTP-ness of the stack?
No.
Still HTTP.
It's still HTTP.
There's HTTP 2 as well.
We don't have HTTP 2 right now unless you run on IIS on Windows 10.
Right.
Now, HTTP 2 covers a lot of things. It's like channel multiplexing, it's HTTP header compression, it's push promise, it's new credential type stuff. You'll get some of those things for free depending on the web server you run on, because it's implemented at the server level. Other stuff requires API, and we're working on that as we go at the moment. But fundamentally, someone still has a socket open, someone is still parsing HTTP messages as they come in and then presenting them to you using request and response. And if you're doing a WebSocket, you're still having to call a thing that says, I want to treat this incoming request as a WebSocket handshake request, upgrade me to a binary sort of thing. That's still the same case it is, you know, in ASP.NET 5 as it always been.
Here's another question. There's been a fair amount of community feedback around sort of bundling and minification. Are we just going to stick with Gulp and Grunt? Well, it's Gulp, right?
Gulp or Grunt. Gulp, we support
Gulp
both.
Or Grunt. Or is it going to be something that you do internally in Visual Studio?
Gulp and Grunt.
I think but the underlying question would be, what if you like the runtime minification? That's the essence of that question.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that you would then write a piece of middleware that would go and squish that.
Yes, you would. Or you could write a piece of, you could do a tag helper that does that, for example.
Yeah.
You could do it as part of the build process. You could have something that hooks into the DNX build step or package step and does it using .NET instead of Gulp or Grunt. Right now in our templates, Gulp is what we set up by default. And by the time we RTM, we'll have bundling and minification set up in there as well. But you know, we're open to community feedback. We're going to look at what customers think and how they.
And this is a challenge. Like, people are saying, well, like, but that's great. But what about the prescription? Mm-hmm. And I know that it's unusual or maybe a little bit uncomfortable sometimes if Microsoft doesn't give you the prescription. But sometimes it's like, well, you know, if you use Advil, that is good for these kinds of things, and aspirin's good for those kind of things.
We are going to give a prescription. As Damian said, we are going to put something in the box.
But the default prescription isn't right for everybody.
Correct.
There will be a default prescription, but I'm just pointing out that there's more choice than ever before. And I think a little bit of, I mean, if I may be so bold, is to say that the community and the user of ASP.NET is going to have to think about what's right for them. And, you know, having runtime bundling and minification might be great for a small application, but if you're doing this at a large enterprise or a large startup, you're probably not going to do that. You're going to do it at build time. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to think about what's right for you. And I think what's fun about ASP.NET 5 is that the choice is now possible.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like with any framework, you can plug out and put in Postgres or something like that if you wanted to.
Absolutely. I was actually going to say all this stuff we've been talking about applies to Entity Framework as well, right? Like, it's good to have a default prescription. And in fact, in Entity Framework, we didn't do a good job of that before. We'd be like, you can do anything. Just pick whatever modeling scenario you want. And now we're saying, let's be a little bit more opinionated and say this is what to do by default, but let's also open everything up so you can plug in whatever you want.
It's a great point about the Postgres stuff. Entity Framework 7 also can talk to NoSQL type stores as well. So he's got demos where he's actually shown it talking to Azure Table Storage.
Yep, we've done some prototyping work against a Redis cache as well. So what we're doing there is not trying to build some magic framework that hides the type of data store, because that looks great on stage and never works when you actually try to write an app with it, right?
I like the pragmatism there. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, so we're trying to take core stuff that applies to all data stores, bake that in, and then if there's stuff that's relational specific, put that in a relational specific library.
Got it.
So I like Jesper's question.
Oh, okay. Will .NET 5 be able to run on IIS 7? That's Jesper's question.
What does that mean, .NET 5?
I mean, let's assume there's ASP.NET 5? No, there's no .NET
5. Or
I think they mean ASP.NET 5.
I think it means ASP.NET 5, and it'll run on Windows Server 2008 up.
So the answer is no, because IIS 7.5 is the minimum, and that's on 2008 R2. So 7.5 and up, not IIS 7.
Correct.
Okay, so another one from Jason. Will ASP.NET identity be changing with the new ASP.NET 5?
It already has. So the templates as they are right now in 2015 RC use ASP.NET Identity 3. ASP.NET Identity 3 is built on top of DNX, mm-hmm. or built on top of ASP.NET 5, to work with ASP.NET 5 applications. You can't use Identity 3 in ASP.NET 4X, just like you won't be able to use Signaler 3 or MVC 6 on top of ASP.NET 4X or a system web-based application.
And that's because the new identity stuff is taking advantage of the new parts of our stack, like dependency injection and stuff like that.
Logging.
Okay, yep. Got it. So, John R., will ASP.NET continue to open up more ways for a developer to tap into the pipeline?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
more than ever.
More than ever. We will. I mean, some things will be more first class than others.
Is there anything private or internal?
So there's a few things that are private right now. For example, Helios. That's the part of that lives in IIS that boots a DNX application. That's currently private. We haven't done the work
to
open source that yet.
That's how IIS and
ASP.NET talk. That's how IIS and ASP.NET 5 talk. Okay. That's how we boot the CLR when you're in IIS versus from the command line. I think it's the only significant part that we have that's private.
Sometimes
right?
You would be running around inside the object browser. You'd be like, oh, that's internal. Yeah, Microsoft.
Yeah. And the plan is to open that up as well. We just haven't got to it yet. There's lots of work to do, and we'll get to that.
In fact, the pattern you'll see is that in a lot of the libraries we have now in MVC, we'll have an internal namespace. So it's not actually internal. It's marked public, but we namespace it internal and say, this is intended for internal use, but we've left it public because there might be something useful there. In the past, you would go, ah, it's internal, I can't call it. Well, now, hey, call it, but don't call it if you want support. But it's open source, so you can call it if you want.
It feels like more choice is the mantra here.
It
go
is
ahead.
More choice.
I was just going to say with that internal thing, too, we're doing the same thing in Entity Framework, is everything is public by default, but we are setting aside parts of the stack in the internal namespace and saying, we're not guaranteeing that we won't break this we between releases. This. So
just to finish up, Thomas has a really good question. Is there going to be migration / help between EF6, EF7, ASP.NET, ASP.NET 5?
You want to do the EF?
I'll take the EF part first. So there will be guidance on how to do it. I would say that we're not going to recommend that all apps built on Entity Framework 6 upgrade to EF7. We'll definitely get to a stage in the future where we say EF7 is recommended for new applications, but it's not going to make sense to upgrade everything. We're still doing patch releases and minor releases on EF6.
Got it. And now, 20 seconds.
It's going to be the same thing, guidance. There will not be a tool. I'll tell you right now, there is not going to be a tool you point at your MVC5 application and it upgrades it to MVC6.
No.
Yeah, to be fair, we didn't have one that you pointed to MVC4 and upgrades you to MVC5 either.
That's true.
But there will be plenty of guidance.
So you should probably make a new project and start bringing pieces
start
over.
Start bringing pieces of code over.
Well, it feels like we're just more open about what people can do. People have more choice, and I think that's happiness all around. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. We will catch you guys after the break. Take care.